everyone. This is Tom Salemi of Device Talks. Welcome to our newest podcast, Stryker Talks. Few companies in the medical device industry touch the entire spectrum of healthcare like Stryker. From accident scenes to ERs, from ORs to patient rooms, Stryker delivers the supplies, tools, and devices used to provide patients with the highest quality of care. In this podcast, we'll talk with the company's leaders to gain a better understanding of how innovation, new technologies, and teamwork will further Stryker's mission. Let's go. Tom Salemi of Device Talks. Welcome back to the Stryker Talks podcast. We've got an extra special episode for you this time around. I had a chance to talk to Spencer Stiles, who, of course, is a group president of Orthopedics and Spine at Stryker, one of the two big business units. And Spencer and I covered a lot of territory talking about ortho, talking about robotics, talking about overall strategy and digital health. Great conversation. Asked him a few questions at the end that he was kind enough to answer, specifically about one about soft tissue robotics. Stryker is definitely one of those companies to keep an eye on. Very M&A focused, particularly this year. And sometimes when they do M&A, they go big. So it's going to be interesting to track Stryker's progress going forward. And maybe you can find some tea leaves in this conversation with Spencer Stiles. But before we begin this episode of Stryker Talks, I'd like to bring in our sponsor, DornerWorks. I'm here with David Dorner, founder and chairman of the board, and Kathy Patterson. She's the new business development manager at DornerWorks. David, welcome to the podcast, and tell us about DornerWorks.
Well, thank you, Tom. I'm very honored to be here. DornerWorks is a company that I founded 24 years ago now, and we really focus on embedded systems engineering. So those are the electronics and the software that runs those electronics and embedded electronics. And they're everywhere these days, but particularly they're everywhere in the medical industry and hospital equipment, both with inpatient devices, robotic replacement arms and legs, prosthesis, for instance. And we have a lot of expertise from the aerospace and defense market, a lot of interesting technology that we're actually bringing from that market segment into the medical space as well. With that intent, we actually have increased our talent within DornerWorks. We're a company around 100 people, and we just brought on Kathy Patterson recently within the last year to head up our medical market from a business development perspective. Kathy?
Yes, thank you, David. I'm really excited to be here, especially on the talk. I bring over 25 years of experience as it relates to medical device companies and how they bring products to market. But more importantly, I also have some experience on the side of their end users, so I understand the hospital environment as well. And so I'll be able to marry that to the technologies that we're working with today at DornerWorks.
That's fantastic. Well, we'll hear more from David and Kathy a little later in the podcast. If you want to find out more about DornerWorks right now, go to its website, DornerWorks.com. That's DornerWorks.com. Well, Spencer Stiles, welcome back to Stryker Talks.
Thanks for having me, Tom. It's great to be here.
I think if I remember correctly, I think you were our first Stryker Talks guest, if not first, second. So it's nice to have a repeat visitor.
Yeah, well, I'm glad I got invited back for a second round. So. You must be running out of people, Tom.
You did such a good job. Yeah, right. I know we covered your career in the previous one, so folks, we'll put that link in the show notes so they can track it down. So let's get right into the business. Just for kind of an overview, give us a sense of the areas you cover within your part of the business so folks have that frame of mind, since it's been a couple of years, I think, since we've had you on, and where it fits into Stryker at large.
Yeah, sure. I'm happy to. So from a commercial responsibility, I'm responsible for orthopedics and spine, which includes our joint replacement, adult reconstructive business, hips and knees. That includes our trauma and extremities business, which is a trauma business, core trauma, an upper extremity shoulder arthroplasty business, and a foot and ankle business. That also encompasses our spine organization, which is a core spine and then an enabling tech business for spine. And then inside what we call orthopedics and spine is also DRE, which is our digital robotics and enabling tech organization, which works on a variety of technologies, platform technologies for Stryker, and has been a really fascinating part of our organization to see evolve over the last few years. That's on sort of the day-to-day commercial. We also, in roles like mine, there's two of us, Andy Pierce and I, sort of split the company. We have a variety of functional responsibilities as well. So the enterprise-wide M&A business development is also in my world and under my responsibility. And then Andy and I split the world. It's a little confusing, but we both have direct in North America and most of Europe, Canada. But then we chop up other parts of the regions that we have. And so I might have some of his portfolio and regions that I have and
vice versa
for him. Yeah. So it's actually a really neat operating model for the two of us. Is it keeps us involved in each other's business. We're cheering each other's business on. We're part of the R&D discussions and M&A discussions in each other's business. And so we're really fortunate to have a true enterprise hat on when we think about resource allocation, when we think about growth initiatives. We do all that thinking about what's best for the customer, for the long-term, you know, value creation of Stryker and fulfilling our mission.
Yeah, that's an interesting, I didn't realize the division was that like that in some markets. So does that speak to almost it's more important to have a stronger focus or a stronger understanding of a specific market over a geographic market or geography over sort of the business side of things? Like you really, the business side of things, you want to know all the hospitals in Southeast Asia or all the surgery centers in Vietnam. Does that really speak to that philosophy?
It's a super question. And I would respond with, we want both. We want portfolio expertise.
Yeah.
Somebody really understands what's needed for the customers from a technology standpoint, from a trend standpoint, really, as we think about technology and where a market might be going or segment. Yet we have to have specialization regionally. We need somebody that understands the dynamics of a market. They understand the realities of culture, what nuances might exist. And so we run both. We try to bring portfolio and specialization down to the actual regions themselves. It's slightly a more costly model, but we think it's one that serves us better in terms of making sure that we have the right growth initiatives in place for the long term. It's a little different depending on where we are in the world, but yeah, we found it to be very effective at Stryker.
Okay. Well, that's interesting. So let's talk specifically about DRE. I've always said DRE. I didn't realize it was a word. DRE. Okay. Let's talk about DRE. I just see it spelled out in email. So DRE, we're talking a lot about robotics on the soft tissue side. Lots of momentum there. A lot of new players. Intuitive got their approval for Da Vinci 5. There's been some news on the hard tissue, the orthopedic side, where you folks are the leader. Let's talk first about your surgical robotics business. What's the state of, is it hard tissue? Is it hard tissue versus soft tissue?
Or do we say both? Hard tissue, yes. That's it.
Hard tissue, all right. Yep. Hard tissue robotics. I mean, you're, I think, clearly the leader in the space now. I don't know if there are as many emerging startups in the space. Certainly there's been some approval by other larger players in shoulder. But what's the state of hard tissue or surgical robotics right now?
Yeah, so inside DRE, it's built into digital robotics and enabling tech. And this is really in the robotics portion of this, at least on the development side. The commercial side is still specialized around the disease state. So we have expertise, obviously, in adult reconstructive hip and knee. And we're building expertise in robotic adult reconstructive for shoulder. And then for spine as well, as you've heard us talk about the applications that are on the horizon. But maybe going back to how is Mako doing, you know, we're extremely pleased with the progress as we came out of 2023. And we had one of our strongest years yet with Mako on a global basis. And not only are we seeing great adoption to the technology and more units in the marketplace, but we see utilization of our implants on robotics accelerating at rates that we hadn't seen before. Right now in the United States, for example, we almost have 60% of our knees, the triathlon knee is put in with Mako. That's a remarkable number, really talking about, you know, you're knocking on the door of standard of care, where when somebody's going to do an adult knee reconstructive for it with Stryker, they're going to use Mako. And we expect those trends to continue. We've seen significant growth now over 30% in hips in the U.S. as well, and we expect those numbers to continue to go up. A few years ago, we accelerated our investments in the development of additional applications because one of our beliefs is that investments made in a robotic technology for a disease state and really in adult recon, we have hips, knees, and uni. We said, imagine if we're able to meet the needs of shoulder arthroplasty. Imagine if we can meet the needs of spine. And so we put more investment behind and started to work on those applications, and those will enter into the marketplace late this year. with, I would say, ramp and true commercialization in 25. But we're really excited about what that'll bring in terms of being able to leverage the platform. And one of the things, Tom, I think is different about Stryker is the long-term investment in the programs associated with robotics. There is significant training, significant education. You know, we've been extremely intentional about making sure in the teaching centers across the United States, and now we've expanded this into Europe and Asia, how do we ensure that there's a Mako unit in these particular facilities? So as you go through residency, as you go through fellowship, you have exposure to this technology because it's going to be part of your practice in some sense, one way or the other in the future. And ultimately, we fast forward to what are these patient outcomes like? And we hear all the time that people have better success with robotics, more predictable, takes strain off the physician, provides a better outcome for the patient themselves. And we're really excited about, you know, the continued momentum we're building, especially with the additional applications. Maybe one final thing that you might have seen, we actually put some money behind a direct-to-patient advertising campaign that started really in the middle of last year and will extend through the middle of this year. And that's around Scan, Plan, Mako, Can. You know, it's a comprehensive approach into the marketplace to bring education to patients that with the right type of scan and the right enough information to make the good decision around needing a hip or knee replacement, you can put that into the machine, you can find a surgeon that does something robotically, and you can have an improved outcome. That's been really beneficial. The amounts that you might know in the tech world on the clicks, on the connections, on the amount of people that are visiting our website now and the portals and connection to surgeons is skyrocketed. And this has been a really productive use of our resources, at least for about a year period where we've done this. Quite frankly, we looked at it, we said, well, it's probably going to raise the level of hard tissue robotics for all the companies that have a technology. And we felt that was okay. Our job as market leaders is to say, well, if this helps all, that's great. We think robotic arthroplasty is a better solution. So let's go out and make sure we educate the customer.
So who do you think you're drawing in with that sort of campaign? I imagine it's people are going to need the replacement or some sort of surgery procedure. Ultimately, are you getting someone who was just going to sort of leave it to their surgeon as to how it was done and sort of drawing them into this? Because I can see, I mean, healthcare has become such a black box that people want some assurances and people want some understanding of what's happening. So I could certainly see a campaign like that providing a little bit of inside information and I guess comfort to someone who's headed in that direction anyway. So I've asked you a question and then thrown in my commentary. who are you targeting with that sort of campaign?
You're part of the way there. I'd say it's a couple. One, it's the patient that would say, hey, I'm going to go see my surgeon. Yeah. In whatever way that surgeon directs them, that patient might pause now and they might show up with another set of questions and just say, hey, is this technology available? What does this mean for me? And sometimes that might even mean them getting a second opinion from a surgeon that actually utilizes this technology. And part of this particular campaign, there's a very easy to use surgeon locator where you can, through a click, it brings you to somebody that uses Mako. That's, you know, the advantage to Stryker. But really, we just want the discussion to occur between the patient and the surgeon. So there's awareness of the optionality out there. That's one patient that's been stimulated by this. The other is the patient that's been, well, I'm not sure I'm going to get one. I have pain in my hip or my knee. I've been thinking about this. I've been putting this off, and it agitates them to go, wait, there's a newer technology that is, you know, more widely spread use now. Maybe I need to go think about this again and see what the results are. In our campaign, we talk about faster recovery times. And so that might be something that pushes somebody over the edge. It goes, well, my friend, they had their knee done and it took X amount of time to recover. Maybe this gives me a little better chance to get back at whatever I want to do, be that, you know, one of the commercial shows, people dancing at a wedding. Another one shows a trip of a group of friends and they go swimming off a boat, these type of things. But I think those are the type of patients that we've seen some benefit from. We've also actually had calls from hospitals and surgeons at hospitals saying, hey, I saw this. We are now getting questions from patients. Do we have this technology? We want to talk to you, Stryker. We want to make sure that we too have this type of technology in our facility. And so that's been a benefit as well.
Well, that's great coverage of the robotic side. Let's talk about the D part of DRE, the digital side. What does that encompass? I know you've got some work in 3D and AI, and maybe we could talk about MyMako as well, since we're talking about Mako. How do you define, when you're talking to someone, how do you define digital or digital surgery to folks, and how does it fit into what you do?
Sure. I am going to double click one more thing on Mako, because I think it's really important and it's more relevant, I even think, in what we're seeing in the more recent periods in the last handful of quarters, and that's the global growth. It's pretty crazy to see the adoption levels worldwide now, and quite frankly, very exciting for the organization when we think about bringing technology to markets, places like Japan, places like Australia that have always utilized enabling technology for surgical interventions. But that opportunity, Tom, is really exciting to think about raising the level of care and that standard of care in these markets all over the world. So I just think sort of an interesting reality that's accelerated in the more recent years, which is really exciting to see. To answer your question on digital, you know, it's probably the more exciting frontier, is a lot of it's still being created and it's changing real time, especially with the utilization of AI and now generative AI, and how to make sense of this for both the products where we're serving customers, and then even in big organizations, of how do you utilize that technology to drive efficiencies and improvements. So when we talk about digital at Stryker, we talk about it in a few different ways. I'll start with the customer and externally facing. These are the services and solutions we might sell, which include things like XR, and we have various platforms of XR, and then the data and the information that's generated by various products, including Mako, including XR, including other technologies that we have, and how we might utilize that data to help with decision-making for our customers in the future. And so that's sort of the outward customer-facing explanation. We also look at it at Stryker as a way to build the foundation of digital in our company as we think about utilization of cloud, product security, other technologies that are required to make sure across a complex platform of various diverse technologies that you're making sure you're bringing commonality so that you can scale and utilize digital for good. And both of those are well underway at Stryker, and we actually think we've made some great leaps forward in more recent quarters. I go back to, you know, externally, let's talk a little bit about XR technology.
So XR, is that extended reality? Is that, what would XR do?
Well, it depends on which hardware solution we're talking about. And I'll talk a little bit about two of them that we use. Right now, we're the only company in the world that has a clearance for an XR technology for guidance, and that's for shoulder arthroplasty. And we have a partnership. We utilize HoloLens, which is a Microsoft product, but it's our software that actually gives guidance to a surgeon. So a surgeon can actually line up for a shoulder anatomy, and where they're actually going to actually drill, it will actually give them real-time feedback and give the exact measurements and give you color coding of red or green and give you the markings. And you actually can do that guidance and line it up all by using an XR heads-up technology. And that happens. That is a version of it. Another one, different, but other types of value, is what we are working on with Vision Pro and the Apple product, which is a more immersive spatial computing technology, Apple's word. And what we've done so far there is we showed now the ability to do pre-planning, so you can actually visualize all your plans, the images that are taken for the anatomy and how that shows up in the device. But you can imagine we're working on the interoperative capability as well. And we expect that in the not so distant future, but we're working through the regulatory pathways. But that will give you another set of images as well as some of the imaging that takes place currently inside an operating room. It'll actually give you that in the XR technology itself. And that'll be pretty remarkable because you can now move that to where it makes most sense. You can actually utilize some of the data that's coming from that for good to make other decisions in the care environment and in the future. And so those two technologies, I think, are emerging and will serve us very well, both from the efficiencies they drive and hopefully the clinical advantage, but the ability to get information and data off these as well to help with future interventions is really important.
We'll take a break from this conversation to bring back our sponsor, DornerWorks. I'm here with David Dorner. He's founder and chairman of the board, and Kathy Patterson. She is business development manager. David, you mentioned you did work previously in the aerospace defense industries. What are some of the challenges that you're solving in those industries that translate into the medical device market?
Sure, Tom. So we've done a lot of work with some of the DoD, DARPA, for instance, where we've invented a cybersecurity technology that really helps proliferation of embedded electronic systems and interconnectivity and which really directly applies to medical systems as well. You definitely want to keep a system such as a robotic system that's operating on a patient that may be connected to the internet, either through, you know, Wi-Fi or the hospital's Ethernet, protected from cybersecurity vulnerabilities.
That's a great point, David. How will these challenges evolve and possibly be solved with the rise of technologies like artificial intelligence and machine learning?
Sure. So the advantage of AI and ML is that you can move those algorithms down into the embedded system, into the embedded device. So for instance, as I was mentioning robotics earlier in a patient maybe where you have a robot, that those algorithms can be implemented inside the robot with something that we have an expertise in called FPGAs. And that's an acronym. It stands for field programmable gate arrays, but essentially it's a computerized programmable computer chip that's very fast and can do things in parallel. So unlike a microprocessor in your computer, for instance, like on your laptop, this would do multiple things in parallel. It can do them very fast and efficiently. And that allows us to implement a lot of these advanced AI and ML algorithms right down in the embedded system.
And I would add to that, it's been my experience over the years, there's so many medical device companies collecting data that they're collecting it and they don't know what to do with it. And some of it's really good, some of it's not so great, but to be able to filter through that using FPGA is an advancement all on its own. And that is really what we'll bring to med device companies.
Yeah, and so and per Kathy's point, that allows you to do a lot more of the processing down the embedded system as opposed to just dumping the network with raw data that has to be post-processed. This allows you to process the data in real time with your AI and ML algorithms in an FPGA and then send out just the result to the network.
Right, exactly.
So Kathy, with data security becoming a top concern for device manufacturers, can you share advice on getting ahead of the evolving regulations and helping to ensure patient privacy?
Well, the good news is we've always had a big focus on patient privacy anyway. Everybody knows that. But because technology is advancing so quickly, it's become easily penetratable because we're using more wearables. We have more things going on out in the field. And we really have to get down to what's going to be good for the patient and the company that's providing those wearables. You don't want somebody to hack into your pacemaker, but that's what we're facing today because of all the connectivity. So we're trying to connect new things. We're trying to connect legacy things. So really what it comes down to is using a third party to help you get there, because that's the only way you're going to be able to stay ahead of the game.
In some of the areas that we can benefit that problem, as Kathy described, is what I mentioned earlier with our cybersecurity firewall systems that we developed with DARPA funding that really has an applicability here to this problem set.
And finally, Kathy, do you have any general advice for device manufacturers vetting a new product idea? What are some of the potential roadblocks that manufacturers might not be considering?
Well, I can't get it all into a couple of minute answer, but what I will say is understanding what you are trying to solve is first and foremost, and to begin with the end in mind, because everybody gets tied up into what's going to happen with validation and testing. You need documentation. And sometimes what happens is you come up with a great idea, but you didn't think it all the way through to the end. So try to remember, you got to keep that regulation, the FDA, all of those things on the front end, not on the back end. And that would be the best advice I could give any medical device company out there. And use third party for validation, documentation, and all of the things that the hospital and the FDA is going to want from you.
And one thing I like to keep in mind as well is something I bring in from the aerospace and defense world is that when we're designing systems, embedded electronic systems to help aerospace and defense, we're thinking about the soldier. How can we help the soldier? And we keep that frame of mind. Medical, it's really just the same thing. You're thinking about the patient. How can you help the patient? What is your technology doing that really is helping the patient? And it sounds all maybe obvious to say, but if you have that framework in mind as you go through the steps that Kathy mentioned, then keep things in perspective.
All right. Well, thank you, DoinerWorks, for sponsoring this episode. If you want to find out more information about DoinerWorks, go to its website, DoinerWorks, that's spelled DoinerWorks. .com. That's DoinerWorks.com. How complicated is the shoulder as a place to perform surgery? I imagine it's pretty tangled in there.
It's tangled. It's tight. Access is really important. And that's where, you know, a combination of pre-planning and really understanding from an image of how you're going to enter and access and then where you're going to cut bone and how much bone. It's There's not a lot of bone there, and so you want to make sure your cuts are really accurate. That technology is available now in helping surgeons get better and better with more predictability. I think for us, we've had a great advantage in our shoulder technology, both from a planning standpoint. We use a planning program called Blueprint, where about 65% of our customers that utilize our shoulder are pre-planning with Blueprint. Blueprint, too, Tom, uses a digital AI technology that allows you to actually access a variety of other people that would do this procedure. And this is how they would plan the case and where they would put the implant, which is pretty neat to see. And that can give you a version. You can still make your adjustments. And we took it even another step where now we're the only company that actually makes a specific implant for that particular case. We have our standard implants that can happen in a more rapid sense. But if you can wait a few weeks and plan that surgery to take place, you can actually get what we call shoulder ID, a specific implant for the anatomy that's been pre-planned and then can be put in. Against that digital backbone.
A customized plan is it additive
manufacturing? Personalized. It's a personalized implant for that particular patient. Yeah.
Okay.
And you can imagine, you know, your question back to just big picture digital, we think of the ability to know more before we ever put an incision in a human about what's needed, where it's needed, when it's needed, why it's needed, plan the procedure, even things like inventory, which if anyone in orthopedics is listening, we all wrestle with this. How can we remove, you know, the 8 trays that we have on the back table and get that down to a more streamlined approach? Well, part of that is knowing, you know, exactly the implant that's needed and the tools to put that implant in, what instruments specifically. And that's where things like robotics and guidance will lead to over time.
And I would think that the shoulder is an area where, as a patient, you have a sore shoulder. You want to make sure they get it right. You're willing to wait a couple of weeks, I would think, to make sure you get exactly what you need.
All the joints are a lot of pain. Shoulder's a lot of pain. There's a lot of movement. The recovery is not as fun because you need your hands and your arm and moving it around. It can be a lot. So we want to make sure that we're helping surgeons really prepare for and the patient's ready for and that we can offer the best outcome.
Let's talk a bit about innovation, where we're talking about a lot of new ideas that are coming, new developments. How is Stryker approaching innovation internally? What are your programs look like?
Yeah, I'll maybe talk a little bit about our operating model as we think about innovation.
Okay.
One of the neat things about Stryker and a differentiator in the market is our specialized business units. We have 7 operating divisions, depending on how we define it. We have well over 20 business units. And those business units have specialized marketing, research and development, and M&A, and more often than not, specialized sales forces as well. But that marketing and R&D is part of the magic that is always looking at unmet needs, listening to voice of customer, and funneling that back to the innovation machine, where they go back and say, all right, are we working on the right incremental innovation to currently our portfolio we have? And then truly what disruptive game-changing innovation might be out there, knowing about trends in the marketplace, knowing about consumer technology that might exist, as we've seen a lot in the tech space, for example. But that's part of the magic of what keeps us sort of on the front side of innovation. And that's really on the organic side. I mentioned BD or M&A in each of those businesses as well. That's absolutely critical because that's a little bit of our external arm to innovation. And sometimes if we say, well, we can't meet the need of the voice of customer, you know, in our organic approach, how do we go and say, we need to acquire this? And how can we look into a technology that might be a fit that brings that forward?
Now, how do you evaluate those potential targets? And do you often know sort of what size or scope of company you're looking for? Like, we're only looking for tuck-ins right now. We need to find something big and strategic. Or do you go out and find those size of project you're looking for? Is it more opportunistic where, look, we found this company right now. It's of this size, but it's something we need. How does that usually play out?
Yeah, so on our M&A strategy at Stryker, we're cautious about how much we share as we think it's a great differentiator. But I'll give you sort of the big picture approach. We are always looking at large-scale acquisitions and tuck-in acquisitions. However, depending on our capital allocation, we may hyper-focus on the tuck-ins like we have been over the last, I'd say, year and a half, because we spent a fair amount of money with Wright Medical and Vocera. And so we were looking more at tuck-ins, which we've been more active. We just announced one last week called Cerf Medical, which is out of France. It's the original dual mobility cup. It will be in our joint replacement business. That's an example of a great tuck-in that has a geographic growth opportunity as well as a portfolio growth opportunity. But we're always assessing the larger key scaled acquisitions, both in our businesses, but also in the adjacencies. And that's been how we originally entered into the vascular space, neurovascular, way back when we bought our neurovascular business. But we're looking at those all the time. And my partner in growth, as I call him, Andy Pierce, and I spent a fair amount of time talking about the markets and the adjacencies and how to deploy that capital. We try to empower the business units that they're constantly bringing these ideas forward. Really, we don't want to limit them with, you know, we only have this much money. We want them to think big. We want them to be bold. We want them to push. Now, we might have to stagger the timing depending on how much money's available at the time or where mm-hmm. we might be in a period or year. But ultimately, it's part of our growth strategy. And although we did spend a fair amount of money and have done tuck-ins, we're building back up that firepower. And over the last, you know, couple of quarters, we've seen more and more bigger opportunities. We're back in that discussion. We like sometimes to talk about them as like meals. We're not only at the appetizer, but we've got some entrees as well that we're looking at. And, you know, maybe a few full meals, we'll see. But we think the environment right now is good for M&A. We think it'll strengthen here over the next 24 months as well. And we'll be ready to do our fair share of it and make sure that we're finding assets that bring value to our business.
I mean, Kevin Lobo, your CEO, perked up a lot of his ears and raised a lot of eyebrows early this year when he said M&A was something you're looking toward again. And he hinted at least that it could be something big. And as you mentioned, some of the larger deals you've made of late, right? Vocera, go back 10 years and talk about Mako. They're always exciting deals. You can't say anything, but are you looking for some sort of kind of game-changing company identifying changing technology? Or is it going to be something familiar to all of us? And I'll just shut up and have you tell me absolutely nothing.
There's not much I can share. I'll give some context. One of the things we talk about is the scale of Stryker today. So, you know, we exceeded $20 billion at the end of last year, which was a major milestone in our history. And it's a much bigger company today than it was 5 years before, obviously, and 5 years before that. So even as we think about the scale required to drive meaningful growth, it has to be bigger. And so one of the things that we're always sort of wrestling with our teams is the energy and effort to do the tuck-in and how that compares to a scaled deal as well. And so there's not a perfect formula. M&A has art to it, for sure. It's not just science. There has to be a willing seller. There has to be the right need for the organization. The cultures have to fit. There has to be great economics, all these type of things. But if you can find that, Stryker's in a position to do deals from small to very large. And we remain active in assessment. And we'll continue to prioritize this as a way to grow the organization.
Do larger macroeconomic factors come into play? I'm thinking about interest rates and that they might be dropping interest rates a couple of times this year. Is that something you wait to see what happens, or do you have the cash and you don't really need to concern yourself with those sort of issues?
It's something we track for sure and watch very carefully. However, it hasn't limited us in some of the smaller tuck-in deals we've done. We're sensitive to our cash position and that cost of capital. However, you know, when interest rates go up, they must come down as well. And so, you know, as you mentioned, there's likelihood that they do come down a little bit, and that'll change sort of the environment again. And so we've seen the opportunity to buy companies in all different environments and all different economies and all different spots in the world. And when there's, you know, a great clinical solution and the right culture and these things that we find are great value, we go after it and figure out a way to get it done.
And just final question, and I'll finish with one of my where do you see sort of questions. So circling back to Mako and to surgical robotics, you referenced the different applications that you'll be pursuing with Mako in the future, hopefully later this year. I referenced that there's another competitor out there who's in the shoulder now. What does the hard tissue space look like in robotics in a few years? Are there more players? Do you see yourself as the primary dominant player? How does this area develop? Because in soft tissue, things are going crazy. There's companies all over the place. It's been a little more quiet on the hard tissue side of the business.
Yeah, I think in orthopedics, it's interesting because of the associated implants. That's the big difference between the soft tissue world and the hard tissue world is that sensitivity. And that's still critical to Stryker. And we want to make sure we have world-class implants that are solving true clinical challenges and helping improve patient outcomes. And so that has to be married and coupled with that robotic technology. But I do envision a future where there are a variety of different specialties and disease states where a robotic solution helps provide a better outcome. We're going to see that in the spine. We're going to see that in shoulder. You can imagine we have a very good sized foot and ankle business, another complex joint. And you can just continue to see more applications. Hopefully we can see more pre-planning, more imaging capabilities to provide us and the technology with better interventions, smaller systems for access and that capability. But it's a really exciting time. I do believe, as we think of standard of care, robotic solutions using haptics, safer, more predictable surgery is a must. And in our teaching centers across the world, I hope that this becomes sort of the standard of care where they show up and they learn how to utilize this at an early stage of their career and they utilize it their entire career. So it's an exciting time for orthopedics. There's plenty of innovation opportunities in front of us, and we're super grateful to be part of it.
That's great. Am I limiting Stryker by confining you to the hard tissue world? Do you ever see an opportunity where you take your robotics show on the road and travel over to the other side?
Well, we believe we are a great robotics organization. We remain a passionate M&A company. And so you can imagine our adjacencies. That's an area that we continue to assess. So there's some neat technology there for sure.
Very deftly handled, Spencer. Thank you so much for the time today. It's always a lot of fun talking to you.
Well, Tom, thanks for all you do for the industry. We're grateful for your work. So nice job. Thanks for everything.
All right, well, that is a wrap. Thanks so much to DornaWorks for sponsoring this episode of Stryker Talks. Thanks, of course, to Spencer Stiles for joining us on the podcast. And thanks, of course, to you for being a loyal listener to Stryker Talks and the Device Talks Podcast Networks. If you haven't already subscribed to the Device Talks Podcast Network, please do it on any major podcast player, Apple, Google, Spotify, etc. Please share this episode on LinkedIn. And when you do, connect with me, connect with Stryker, connect with Device Talks, connect with Mass Device. If you don't share this episode, then just find me on LinkedIn, Tom Salemi at Device Talks, and send out a connection invite. I'd like to be part of your future MedTech conversations. Other than that, make sure you please follow our Device Talks page on LinkedIn, follow Mass Device, and follow our Device Talks YouTube channel as well. All right. Thanks again, folks, for being part of Stryker Talks. Tune in next time. We'll have another great story from Stryker coming directly to you.